title of our lesson today will be Coping with Grief. And it's another name might be Sorrow, Looking Through the Eyes of Jesus. And we will discuss today 8 ways that Jesus coped with sorrow in his life. The topic of grief may be difficult for us to cover. The study may create tension. It may make you uncomfortable. It may bring back memories that are painful. You may cry. I may end up crying. Death came to our home in October. After months of being on medication that made me sick each day I was on it, I finally became pregnant. After 2 negative pregnancy tests, a positive one came in the emergency room. But our joy was short-lived. 7 hours later, I was in the operating room. We had lost the baby. Jay started his grief process during the surgery. He sat alone and cried. I had a more delayed reaction. My pain came when I came home. I started studying the Bible and reading books on grief. I had to find out if what I was experiencing was normal. The depth of our disappointment over the baby was hard for others to understand. It crept in like a cloud and just stayed there, blocking out all hope and happiness. We not only lost our baby, we seemed to lose our hope of ever having any more. I needed to know that unpleasant, painful emotions would come and go, sometimes in a flood and sometimes in a trickle. Our lives were touched by the pain of human suffering, and in the process of groping for answers and understanding, spiritual growth was produced. God gave us hope, strength, comfort, and compassion. As we came to grips with our anger and depression and our guilt, God stepped into our human weaknesses and lifted us out of the depths of despair. We are now more able to minister to you in your loss. It's important to know that people experience grief for various reasons. Most often we think of the loss of a loved one. But people grieve following a divorce, a retirement from a job, following a move, after a traumatic illness or accident that you lose the use of an arm or a leg, after the loss of a family pet or a loss of your home. Our study today will focus on the loss of a loved one. I hope that following this study, you will be better able to deal with death and minister more effectively to others that experience it. There is so much more I could have put into the lesson, but time didn't permit it. Let's look at how sorrow touched Jesus. Isaiah told us in Isaiah 53:3 that he was, quote, a man of sorrow and acquainted with grief, unquote. Isn't it wonderful to have a God who understands, who's familiar with the grief and the pain and all that we suffer? Turn in your Bible to Matthew 14, starting at verse 12. Did you ever wonder how Jesus responded when his cousin John the Baptist was brutally murdered? Their mothers had been good friends, so there's reason to believe that John and Jesus knew each other well before the public baptism at Jordan. John had fallen victim to the vicious hatred of Herod's wife. At the request of this woman's daughter, John the Baptist's head had been carried in on a platter in a gruesome display of vindictiveness. Matthew reported that his disciples came and took away the body of John and buried it. And they went and reported it to Jesus. Verse 12. Our Lord's reaction is reported in verse 13. Now when Jesus heard it, he withdrew from there in a boat to a lonely place by himself. Jesus' action illustrates the first principle in living with sorrow. He withdrew to a lonely place. True, he later requested the help of his friends, but for the time being, he needed to be alone. Like Jesus, there are times when our thoughts are so private, our sorrows so intense, and our hurts so deep that we need to get alone with God and pour out our complaints to Him. For one thing, we need to get alone to meditate. A time of sorrow presents an opportunity to reflect upon the past, to evaluate our lives, to distinguish what is important from what is unimportant. Furthermore, our times alone should be spent in prayer. That is actually what Jesus intended to do, but the multitudes heard of his retreat and barged in on him. In fact, their presence led directly to the feeding of 5,000. But when that was over, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. And after he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there all alone. Verses 22 and 23. Yet Jesus did not stay alone. He kept life in balance, as we needed to, and he resumed normal activities. He went from a time alone to the feeding of 5,000. Then after another time alone, he went to the disciples, walking to them on the water, as they were afraid of capsizing in the storm. He went from his need to their need. You and I have both seen instances when after a funeral, loved ones and friends come in and do everything for the grieving survivor. Now just lie down. We don't want you to do anything. We'll scrub your floors, do your dishes. Yet this expression of Christian love poses a problem if overdone. One of the most important things you can do in a time of sorrow is to continue as much as possible the normal activities that force you to make decisions. That's principle number two, resume normal activities. This will help you orient yourself to your new life without the loved one. Inactivity lets you dwell too much on the tragedy. That's why Jesus resumed his regular schedule. The story of David in the Old Testament contains a striking example illustrating this principle. When Absalom, his son, had been killed by Joab after an intense battle won by David's army, David went to an upper chamber and wept. Hadn't he given the command that Absalom's life would be spared despite his rebellion? Now Absalom was dead, and David was overcome with grief. When Joab was told, "Behold, the king is weeping and mourns for Absalom," 2 Samuel 19:1, he went to David and said in effect, "David, don't you realize that your mourning is going to create real problems for you? The people have won a great victory, and you are overcome with sorrow. If you don't snap out of it and join the victory celebrations, the soldiers will go home." Though David was personally deeply grieved by the death of his son, he needed to re-enter life and resume his normal kingly duties if he was to hold the respect of his people. Like David, we need to cope with our sorrow by thinking of the needs of others. Jesus also provides us with an example in John 13. He knew he was about to die, yet he arose and started washing the disciples' feet. Nothing will help you overcome sorrow like asking, "How can I get involved in the needs of others?" The moment you start thinking and acting like that, you will discover people with far greater needs than yours. No matter how tragic our situation may be, there are situations even more tragic. This helps to provide balance to our experiences and makes it easier to live with sorrow. Tears are a part of the healing process. Don't be ashamed to shed tears, buckets of them. A misunderstanding of 1 Thessalonians 4:13 has given tears a bad reputation. We are taught that we should not grieve as do the rest who have no hope. This does not mean we should not cry, only that we are not without hope. Sometimes grieving people are admonished not to cry. He is in heaven now. Isn't that wonderful to think of him with Jesus? That may be true, but we are hurting. Present with the Lord means absent from us. Our grief does not have the utter despondence of the person who believes everything is completely, utterly over, but we still feel the void that can be filled by nothing or no one. God gives us tears to express this physical and emotional pain. Jesus wept on hearing of his friend Lazarus' death in John 11:35, even though he knew he was about to give Lazarus a remission from death. David graphically describes his own crying. I dissolve my couch with my tears, Psalm 6:6. My tears have been my food day and night, Psalms 42:3. There are two verses in Revelation 7:17 and 21:4 that talk about God wiping away our tears. However, both verses refer to God and to us being in heaven when this happens and not here on earth. And since we know there will be no tears in heaven, then the tears God wipes away must be the ones we shed on earth now. God does take special notice of our tears. Psalms 56:8 tells that he puts them in his bottle and enters them into the record he keeps in our lives. Romans 12:15 clearly says that we must weep with those who weep. Usually healing is incomplete without tears. Because tears make others feel uncomfortable, we may be inclined to use medication to subdue them. Medication can camouflage our emotions and actually interfere with our grief work. Don't be embarrassed or apologize for your tears. Let them flow. People who love you and want to see your healing will not be offended by them. To weep is not to be guilty of the lack of faith, nor is it a sign of hopelessness. Crying is a natural part of the grieving process. Number 4, accept sorrow as a phase of transition. The disciples of John came to Jesus and asked, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" Matthew 9:14. And Jesus replied that while the bridegroom is present, it is time to rejoice, but when he is absent, they will mourn. And in John 16:20 and 21, Jesus said, "You will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned to joy." Whenever a woman is in labor, she has sorrow because her hour has come. But when she gives birth to the child, she remembers the anguish no more, for joy that a child has been born into the world. Jesus was in effect reiterating what Ecclesiastes says. There is a time to mourn, but there is also a time to laugh. Ecclesiastes 3:4. In other words, everything has its time, and sorrow has its time too. We might benefit by reinstating an Old Testament practice, that of allowing a certain period of mourning for the dead. It was an excellent idea from the psychological viewpoint. For 40 days after a person died, his family would mourn, and then life would resume its normal pattern. In no way do I suggest that you can forget the loved one in 40 days. You cannot, and you never will. But it does mean that you realize that it is unrealistic to spend your whole life in mourning. There is a time to mourn, but there is also a time to rejoice. 5. Share your grief with others. In sorrow, Christ also requested the help of his friends. This time we see Jesus in Gethsemane. He had come to the garden with his disciples and asked them to pray for him. He took Peter, James, and John with him and began to be grieved and distressed. Matthew 26:37. I don't know how much of this was visible to the three disciples, but they certainly should have understood the implicit call for help when he said to them, "My soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch with me." Verse 38. The amazing thing is that those disciples were not very good at encouraging the Lord in his final night of agony. He did not consider it beneath his dignity to ask for their help and prayer support. Sometimes we think that someone as strong as Jesus or a friend we know really does not need that support. But Jesus did. And if Jesus needed it, how much more do we need it in our own hour of grief? You say, "But I don't have close friends like that." Then call someone that you do not know as well. She may become your closest friend as a result of joining in your sorrow and prayer. Simply say to her, "I am going to ask you to stand with me during this time of personal grief. I want you to pray with me and for me and uphold me in the ministry of encouragement during this time." God gives us friends for times like this, and that's what the body of Christ, the local church, is all about. 6. Accept tragedy as the will of God. The Son of Man is to go, just as it is written of him, Matthew 26:24. Jesus was saying that his death was not an accident. It was part of a divine plan, and he accepted it as such. They could not take him until his hour had come. We too must accept tragedy as part of God's divine plan. We are continually saying, "What if we had called the doctor sooner? If he had operated, the person would have lived." We get so bogged down in the what ifs of life because we've never really accepted the tragedy as part of the divine plan. We act as if life depends on us, as if it is our responsibility if someone dies. Yet, if we are acting on the information available to us and somehow make a wrong decision, we must accept our loved one's death as the will of God. If not, we become overloaded with guilt and may be emotionally crippled for the rest of our lives. Jesus could have prevented the death of John the Baptist. Jesus had all the power, but he didn't use it. Yet he did not live with guilt either, or a neurotic preoccupation with the tragic death of his cousin. He accepted the total picture as the will of God. 7. Lay aside resentment. When Jesus was on the cross, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Luke 23:24. That's the seventh lesson we can learn from him. We need to be reminded of this because at no other time are we more critical than at the time of a tragedy. I pity doctors when a patient dies. They get blamed for having operated, and if they did not operate, they get blamed for that. We sometimes expect people in the medical profession to play God, to know precisely how the treatment is going to work out. If it does not work out the way we think it should, we hold them accountable. We get very critical of anyone and anything associated with the death of a loved one. Jesus gave us a clue to what our attitude is to be towards sorrow when he said, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." Matthew 5:4. As we accept our griefs, our sorrows can be used of God to develop within us the ability to comfort others. 8. Realize that sorrow is temporary. Finally, Christ believed our sorrow was only temporary. That's why he told his disciples, "Let not your heart be troubled," in John 14:1. He was leaving to prepare a place for them. "And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." David perhaps said it best in 2 Samuel 12:18-23, after the death of his child. "Can I bring him back? He will not return to me, but I will go to him." We who are Christians have the knowledge that one day we will go to join our loved ones in heaven. Now I'd like to read the poem that's at the beginning of your handout. It says, "Blessed is the woman. Blessed is she who acknowledges her need for God, for she will receive his presence and support. Blessed is she who hungers for closeness to Jesus Christ, for she will be filled with his compassionate love. Blessed is she who is thoughtful of the needs of others, for her own needs will be filled. Blessed is she who learns the lessons of sorrow, for she will be comforted and will give courage. Blessed is she who keeps her heart unblemished by envy, for she will be content. Blessed is she who brings God's peace to others, for serenity will come to her also." Now I'd like to just review quickly the 8 ways that Jesus dealt with sorrow, in case you're taking notes. 1, he took a few moments alone. 2, he resumed normal activities. 3, he responded with tears. 4, he accepted sorrow as a phase of transition. 5, he shared his grief with others. 6, he accepted tragedy as the will of God. 7, he laid aside resentment. 8, he recognized sorrow is temporary. Now I would like to cover 9 points on coping with grief. And this is from your point of view. 1, realize that grief is a normal reaction following losing someone or something of value to you. Just knowing what you're going through is normal makes you feel a lot better about things. 2, cry when you feel like it. Your tears are not a sign of weakness or a lack of faith. This is direct and immediate therapy for the emotional and physical pain that you feel. 3, talk about your feelings with someone who can listen. Share your plans so that you will have a sounding board when making decisions. 4, grief can make your thinking fuzzy. Realize that this is normal. You need not worry about it. 5, hallucinations and nightmares, anger at the person who has died, an intense desire to recapture what is lost, are all common responses to a traumatic loss. 6, realize that you are more susceptible to illness when you are grieving. Try not to neglect your health. You really may not care about yourself, but the caring will come back. An additional pain from illness will not drown your grief. If there is optional surgery, postpone it. Let your body do its grief work before taking on anything else. 7, be aware of making big decisions during this time. It is not a good time to buy a house. Get rid of all your furniture or remarry. Likely your motivation for doing these things is either to forget the past or to replace the person you lost. The impact of the person you lost will never be forgotten. He or she will be integrated into your future. No person can fill another person's shoes. Those major decisions should be postponed until more of the grief work is accomplished. 8, when you have the emotional energy to invest, discover ways to invest your life in new areas. Beginning a new career or hobby, taking classes, volunteering to help others will help you refocus your dependence on the present and future. 9, read Joyce Landorf's book, Morning Song, or listen to the cassette tape with the same title. Read other books on the topic of grief. Okay, now I'd like to cover 9 ways in which you can help someone else work through grief. 1, let her express the full range of emotions. Initially, this may include denial. Don't support false hopes. However, do not force her to face facts that she may not be able to face yet. Acceptance often comes slowly. Guilt may be expressed. Even if it is not valid, allow the person to express it. Lazarus' sister Mary expressed anger at Jesus, and he didn't reprove her. These emotions will be worked through more quickly if they are expressed rather than repressed. Repressed emotions usually result in later depression. 2, be a good listener. You may hear much that is illogical and unrealistic. That does not mean it is not real to the person feeling it. When grief is intense, we attack ourselves. We believe we are responsible for what we had no control over. As a listener, allow those feelings to be expressed whether they are realistic or not. Your verbal denials or logic will probably not be heard. Just listen. 3, what not to say to a grieving person. Anything critical of the mourner, such as, don't take it so hard. Try to hold back the tears. You're upsetting people. It's wrong. Anything which tries to minimize the mourner's pain, such as, it's probably for the best. It could have been a lot worse. She's better off now, is likely to be misguided and unappreciated. Anything which asks the mourner to disguise or to reject his feelings, such as, we have no right to question God. God must love you to have selected you for this burden, is wrong as well. 4, be a sounding board when it comes to making decisions. Discourage your friend from making major commitments or changes while he or she is still grieving. 5, simply stay around. When crisis comes, people flock to old friends for a week or two. Most grief is more intense after the few weeks are over. The numbness wears off and the adjustments stare coldly and stubbornly in our face. Family, physicians, all who deal with the effects of grief in the professional practices, say it takes most people a year and a half to 3 years to recover. A phone call, a card, a change of scenery, a listening ear as the weeks and months roll by. This is the stuff that true friends are made of. 6, meet the immediate needs. Bring food. If possible, put food in throwaway containers so the family doesn't have extra burden of trying to get the dishes returned. Help make phone calls. Whatever's needing. This is going to have a lot to do with who it is and if you're related or whatever to people. But you'll probably be aware of immediate needs that you can respond to. 7, remember as people work through the grieving process that touch can continue to soothe the ragged edges of sorrow. Maybe you don't have the words to say, but so often just an arm around the shoulder or a pat on the back can mean so much to someone who's grieving. 8, encourage the person who is grieving to talk about her feelings. I know in my own situations, I needed to talk about what happened, but yet I didn't want to burden my friends. You know, I felt like, gosh, they've heard it once, they don't want to hear it again. I didn't want to bother them. But to help me work through the grief process, I needed to talk about it. 9, use your tragedy to help others. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3 and 4 says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our trouble so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. You see, God comforts us so that we may comfort those in trouble. God comes along and puts His arm around us and gets us through our problems so that we can come along and put our arm around somebody else who needs help. I'd like to close today with Psalm 116, verse 15. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of His saints.